previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
You see, at Princeton, we're instructed to embellish a little bit, to sell yourself.
Hello, this is the Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, Episode 4, for Law & Order True Crime The Menendez Murders, Episode 5, and it is going to be great! Hello, I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting. I was instructed to embellish, so I did. This is the Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, and I am here, as always, with Tara Ariano. Hello, Tara.
Hello.
So, episode 5, we felt a lot of ways. First, let's hear from the TV Guide summary what this episode is all about with our opening statement. Judge Stan Weisberg, who I keep thinking of as Judge Mark Green, grants a petition allowing the court proceedings to be broadcast on television, bringing a heightened level of public scrutiny to the case. When the prosecution's star witness, Dr. Ozeal, takes the stand, his questionable ethics and motives threaten to destroy his credibility. Meanwhile, the defense faces an uphill battle in getting Judge Weisberg to understand the relevance of Lyle and Eric's complicated upbringing. Is that what they're calling it? Before we get into our star witnesses section, which is stuff that we liked about the episode, Tara, as the less initially familiar party with the case, did you have anything that you wanted to add about what we are seeing here plot-wise in this episode?
No, it's just funny that the description questions the damage that his testimony could do to Dr. Ozeal's reputation. Like, damage is done. That horse is out of the barn.
Oh yeah, it's miles away.
Yeah,
this I think was my least favorite episode of the series run so far, but there was a lot to like about it. Let's hear about those things in the star witnesses section. Tara, would you like to begin?
Yeah, this is we haven't seen Weisberg since very early in the season, and he's back to preside over the case. He's, as you said, played by Mark Green, Anthony Edwards. And I like that they established that his decision to allow court TV to do gavel to gavel coverage was in part motivated by his wounded pride after he got really wrecked in the media. After the Rodney King trials, the episode opens with him in his car listening to the radio and himself getting shat on. So I like that he sort of sees this as his opportunity to redeem himself. Like, apparently not.
Yeah. While I believe he is driving on the shoulder to try to beat the traffic, like, okay. If that is what we were supposed to infer that he was doing, that was like excellent economy of character beats there.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. I thought that too. And then it seemed like there was someone else ahead of him, but I suppose he could be not the only one doing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm from New Jersey.
It's
so.
LA. Yeah.
Exactly.
I also have not had much use for the Leslie and Mr. Leslie relationship because who cares? But I liked the moment where she's trying out different options for the first day of court and he consults on her wardrobe. I thought that was a cute married people detail.
Yeah. And I was like, it did create a little bit of suspense as to which color she was going to select since she was trying to game Pamela Bozanich. She's like, she's going to wear something colorful. So then the next scene we see that I also enjoyed is Bozanich emerging from the elevator wearing fire engine red.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to Dominic Dunn throwing some shade. And then there's Leslie in all white, which is not what I expected. And Dominic Dunn shades that also. Here comes the bride, I believe, is this line. And then they have a shade off, kind of, in the courtroom hallway, because they're clearly familiar with one another. And I liked that detail. I do remember vaguely from his Vanity Fair coverage of this case, which is probably the best work he did in that regard, in my opinion, that he respected Abramson, but really did not like her at the same time. So nice little moment there. I don't know why I hadn't expected him to show up, but it was like, oh yeah, there he is.
I like the detail when testimony is underway that they're talking about this rafting trip that the family took. And all we see of it is this like tiny, not even 5x7 snapshot, like stuck to a bulletin board. Like, what's the point? It reminded me of the first episode of Law and Order that Jamie Ross is in, where he's like, blow this up, you know, 100%. She's like, blow it up 500%. He's like, you're not a private practice anymore. We can't afford it. But obviously everyone here could afford it, presumably, but they just didn't because it was the past. Maybe it would have taken a week to get it back, or who knows?
Well, yeah, we have some other past signifiers that we'll get to later. Teehee.
I also enjoy the way that Cammy, the passive aggressive camera, as I have dubbed it, intrudes in the scenes, particularly when Glenn is testifying, and because it's the camera's controlled by someone down the hall. It's not operated by anyone in the courtroom. It's just mounted to the wall. But at times it will like turn and very noisily like swivel and push in and stuff. So I like how it's getting its own character beats to like comment on the testimony as it's going on without actually saying anything. It's funny.
Yeah, that did make me miss court TV, which, like, I guess now is true TV. I mean, it has been
years
since that change took place. But I kind of missed it. And I did yell, number five is alive, during the first time that it was like, and then
so loud.
I was like, really? Is that? Yeah. Anyway, I agree. I would watch that spinoff. I would also watch the alternate like universe in which the Rand, the reporter, is actually played by RevCam, aka Stephen Collins, instead of just having a weirdly eerie resemblance to him. Was that just me, or do they look alike?
I can kind of see it. I recognize that guy more because he had an arc on the Affair. That's Josh Stamberg, who's a well-known character actor. He was on Parenthood, I think, for a bit too, dating Lauren Graham's character. I think it's more the wig that makes him look like Stephen Collins.
Okay.
But yes, he is definitely aging into his RevCam years, minus the disgrace, we hope.
Oh God, I hope so. All right. Well, in addition to RevStam, I would also like to shout out Ben Winchell as Donovan Goudreau, and especially Sterling Bowman as Glenn Stevens. These are excellent performances as like sort of quintessentially 90s adolescent and post-adolescent pieces of Ivy League shit. Like Bowman is perfect. Like sort of the challenging fuck you stares that he gives to the attorneys sometimes are like, exactly. I knew that guy.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I also want to give a shout out to Lyle and Eric's apparently bottomless pile of non-threatening pastel pullovers, which Leslie has dressed them in for court. They're not in suits. They're in like button downs with no ties and crew neck sweaters to make them look younger and non-threatening. And it kind of works.
I mean,
another bit of good Leslie stage directing.
I mean, Eric always looks non-threatening because Eric is a moist towelette of a human being. But that one seafoam green cable number in particular, I was like, oh, that looks so fuzzy and comfortable.
Yeah.
Probably not what they were going for.
Yeah. There's also a shot where they're really close up on a pink one he's wearing. I'm like, that looks like mohair, my man. Like, that might be a little too fuzzy, bunny.
Speaking of John Waters' take on times past, I love that Jerome Oziel's wig is ascending to an ever higher peak of Johnny Sweetness in every successive episode. Not that we're seeing enough of him, but we'll get to that later.
No. Agree. Also like Leslie commenting back to TV commentary, just goes to show you being a Harvard professor doesn't make you a human being. Hashtag Dershade. She's shitting on Alan Dershowitz for shitting on her in regards
to I was kind of like waiting. It was like 3 minutes left in the episode. I'm like, are we gonna get the trifecta? Someone gonna shit on Yale? Guess we have to wait till next week. And in conclusion, in our Star Witnesses section, the quote from Mr. Leslie, America Online has an email service now. Oh, word? good at the cyber there, are you, reporter guy? Yeah, he had a funny episode, if inadvertently. And there was a lot of inadvertent hilarity in the dialogue. And we'll hear about that now in our aggravating factor section. this was stuff we did not care for or believe in the episode. Tara, over to you.
This is nitpicking because all TV shows do this, but when Zoller detective.
Let's call the whole thing off. Just kidding.
When he's on the stand, on direct, he, you know, describes the scene at the, describes the crime, the murder scene. And then Bozanich goes, what else did you observe? Like, that's not how you question a witness on a stand, except in a television show. Like, that's not helpful. That's not clear. It's not a precise enough question. Like, what else did you observe? It tells you nothing. It's dumb.
Yeah. I wonder though, if when they're questioning like cops or crime scene technicians or other people that would be considered experts or sort of standards, like prosecution standard witnesses, that that's not allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it might be how they do it for experts, but I don't know.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, he's giving a narrative description of the scene and then it's like, and what else? It's like, I don't get how that's useful or efficient. Like, it seems to me like, what did you observe of the couch? What did you observe of the floor? Did you see anything on the ceiling?
Oh, like, yeah,
it seems
actually,
like he would go through
point.
It that way.
Or just you be like, I mean? You know, enter his notebook into evidence or what have you. But like, it does seem you're actually right that a cop, it would be like, he saw a lot of things, so now I will lead him through exactly what he saw because he doesn't necessarily think like an attorney. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. That's what I mean, that you would have to go through it in stages. Like, it would be, what did you observe when you walked in the house? What did you observe when you walked in the living room? You know, what was the state of the bodies? Who shot where?
Like they had the air conditioning up kind of high. Like, that's what I'd be like. I'd be like, I was wondering if they had any cheese in the fridge. Thank you, Miss Bunting.
Yeah. I mean, I get why they do it. It's just to speed things along and make it more narrative. But like, that's just, it's just bad, bad courtroom writing. That's all.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like they also need the filler in this episode either. Anyway. Yes.
No,
continue.
True. Kitty's sneakers are entered into evidence and they are described as size 9. Those weren't size 9s. They were so small.
Yeah. I was like, maybe a kid's size 9.
Yeah. I just thought that was really funny. Like, those would fit me and I'm a size, you know, 6.5, 7. Like, those are small shoes. Come on, guys.
No, they were bitty. I also thought that, I don't know, I always think this whenever a piece of evidence is removed from its official bag or envelope and left pointedly on a table, then I'm like, I just don't think that's what happens.
Yeah. I mean, they held up, what's his name? Beaumont's, his what's the waiter guy's name? I already forgot it. Goudreau.
Yes.
They hold up his fucking time card in its bag, and yet the shoes that are covered in blood can just like hang out. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Detective Joel from Parenthood took his witnesses to a peeler bar the night before to relax them. I mean, if like, sure. But I was like, so what? Like, are we just supposed to think that Zoller is a douche? Or that like, they didn't seem that nervous to me, A, and B, there was no other payoff. Like, they looked a little sweaty, but I didn't think it was because they were hungover or anything.
Yeah, it also wasn't established that, like, if you come and testify, I'll take you to a strip club was, like, some kind of weird quid pro quo. That was a weird detail. I just assumed it was in there because it really happened.
I guess, but that's one of those things that's like, well, okay, sure. But I mean, it did, like, I guess he had the opportunity at that time to, you know, give his big contribution to the episode, which was to tell them, if you're not sure what you're supposed to say, just say, I don't remember. Or if you're caught, say, I don't remember. And they both did that. So I guess that was why. But why did we have to be outside the, I don't know, hot cheeks or whatever it was called? Not necessary.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And now we have another clip, which is a representative example of some of the clunkaroony dialogue from the episode.
Nothing further.
Oh, I know, honey. This is where we take their case apart, one liar at a time.
No. See also during voir dire. What do you know about Beverly Hills? And the prospective juror's like, seems like a ritzy community. Like, really? Seems like a ritzy community. Californian guy.
Yeah.
And then when their friends or whatever, former so-called friends are perjuring themselves, allegedly, I think it's Eric who's like, they're all turning on us. And then Lyle goes, what's wrong with us? How could we have friends like this? Like, all right. I mean, I hope you packed a lunch, first of all. But second of all, who talks like this? Maybe that's why you have friends like this. You sound like a social hygiene film. Suddenly, like, this is a weird note. And then at the end, Leslie's mother dies and her mother's neighbors confront her graveside. How could you defend those monsters? And I quote, like, don't talk like that. And if you're going to, do it at a diner or somewhere else. Not when she just shoveled soil onto her mom. Not the time.
Mm-hmm. Also, this is the first time. It's not like they have a relationship. Like, it's established this is the first time they've ever met. Because the lady has to say, we lived across the street from your mother. Like, I don't care what you think. Like, the fact that she turns on them, I think it's supposed to just tell us that, you know, she's tense. Obviously, she's under stress. Her mother just died, even though they, you know, from what we can tell, did not really have a relationship at all. But still, like, I feel like the real person would be like, you know what? Fuck you. And just walk away rather than fight back.
Yeah. Well, and then there was this very only on TV exchange where I think the husband is like, what worse crime is there than killing your parents? And Leslie really gets to empty both barrels and is like, sexually abusing your kids. That's worse, which. OK, that's debatable, but you're not having this argument next to your mother's literally still open grave. Like, the show has not been. Necessarily that had that light of a touch prior to now, but this episode was just really like just a checklist of points they seem to want to make, and in that regard was not my fave.
Yeah, I agree. It's weird that it's like has so many surface similarities to American Crime Story, but like it's like they learned all the wrong lessons. Like there was personal stuff about the characters in that one, characters, people in that one too. But it just worked so much better. I don't know if it's just the difference between being able to be on basic cable and say fuck occasionally versus or have episodes run longer, which you also can do on FX, which you can't on NBC. But yeah, it's weirdly clunky in ways that seem very avoidable.
Yeah. And I think also that like a lot of this courtroom stuff comes down to like, not technicalities necessarily, but like fine points of the law that they did remind me that they had two juries seated in there and they weren't always in the courtroom at the same time. And there was a lot of courtroom days could drag on because one jury had to be brought in or brought out and then back in again or what have you. But it feels to me like Dick Wolf and his writers are sort of like sticking on the safety of what they know, which is a fairly boilerplate set of like, just that courtroom call and response thing. And it's not that he doesn't do that well, but it's, I don't know. Yeah. It's just not, I thought that once we got into the trial part that the show would really pick up versus seeming to get bogged down in, like I said, this checklist of stuff they want to do.
Well, I'm sure I've said this on previous episodes, but I wonder how much of that is determined by like the participation of the real people being like, make sure you include the part where I blah blah blah, even though, you know, we don't care, but that's important to them as like, this is in my memory, this colors my experience of the trial that my, you know, my mother died. We are trying to adopt this kid, blah, blah, blah. Like who knows?
Exactly.
More nitpicking. Leslie's cross of Goudreau.
Yes.
We keep mixing up the actor and the two French names.
We're about to be calling him Bo Williman because it's like Goudreau and maybe that's just
when she's doing her cross on him, like she's licking her chops before she goes up. Like that's where she has the this is where we take their case apart one liar at a time or whatever. And then she's just like asking these elliptical questions that just sort of call. Like make him look dubious without actually going for the kill. Like it just, it's more bad TV writing that doesn't actually, I think, reflect what a defense attorney would do with a with a witness on the stand.
And that my other issue with that is that it did seem like if she's cross-examining him, she has to basically stick to what was brought up on direct. And a lot of that stuff seemed like beyond the scope of what she could cross on. But again, we are not attorneys. We just watch a lot of attorneys and a lot of television.
Yes. Never enough Fozeal and Judulon, I have in all caps, especially since we learned week that he wrote her a fucking poem that gets read out in court. Like, it's amazing.
That was actually, I think, Falco's best, because she was doing a little bit of cheap seatsing this week, I felt.
Yeah.
But her, he's like, oh, that poem wasn't to Judulon. And then she reads the whole thing and then puts this perfect little pause at the end before reading the name Judulon. And then whips around on him and just cuts him a side eye. It's great. It's perfect. Why isn't Ozeal the star of this miniseries? I know it's because he's a scumbag. I don't care. So was Tony Soprano.
We can't say it enough, honestly.
Also, Judulon is just continues to be that like perfectly sort of weird, trashy detail in all of this. I don't know. It's kind of great.
It's amazing. It also sounds like the kind of name where like someone moved to town as Judy and then was like, that's not interesting enough. If now I'm in LA, I have to call myself something that's going to stand out, because people do that.
Yeah.
How can you possibly handle this trial in a new baby? No one cares, Jill.
It's true. Yeah. And we also didn't need the speech about the same way women have been handling new babies and all their other shit for centuries. Like, okay.
Yes and no.
Yeah. Also, show, don't tell. Yeah. We also
don't show either.
Yeah. And don't, I mean, again, I think your point is well taken that maybe real people involved in this production were like, well, don't forget that this is significant because, you know, Sylvia Leslie Sr. dies. And then there has to be this whole Mr. Leslie is like, well, you know, we missed the red eye, but we can get on first thing in the morning. And she's like, I have a case to present and I can't postpone it. Like, she probably could have, but we get the point. We do.
Yeah.
Her original family didn't appreciate her, except now she's made up with her dad, except, oh wait, I still don't care. You have 42 minutes and 7 episodes and you're not even done the first trial yet. Like, come on.
I think it's 8.
Oh, is it 8?
I looked it up last night.
Okay.
But yes.
Still
the same. I mean, squish it into 7 episodes and cut all this shit. We don't care.
Oh yeah. Good point.
The kid actors playing little Eric and his cousin are terrible. That was my last note.
Although I don't know what child or adult you could get to play this dialogue, which I don't feel is how children talk to each other about
getting massages from their dad when they're 5.
And I like the use of the word pecker. It's like from there to the end of the scene, all I could think about was what the negotiation must have been with standards and practices over which penis synonym, slang synonym, they were going to be allowed to use. At 10 o'clock, this airs.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, no thanks. So that wraps it up for aggravating factors. Let us get into the verdict. Would you like to begin?
Yeah, it's still corny, but like, this is episode 5. I'm obviously not going to bail now. It's only 3 more to go. So it still holds my interest. Edie Falco is delightful. It's good enough for me.
Yeah, it's good enough. This was the weakest one yet. And I am hopeful that was because they were trying to establish a lot of things and a lot of like conflicting hearsay things. And they just felt they couldn't get it done any other way. But I do expect a little bit better from a Dick Wolf, like law procedural that I would like to be getting. This is not showing well against American Crime Story, but again, 3 episodes left. I fear that we will not be seeing any more Jerome and Judulon show, and I am concerned. But I guess we'll find out next week. And that brings us, of course, to our next times. Next time on The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment per TV Guide. The jury hears from Lyle and Eric themselves for the first time when the brothers testify in court, recounting in detail the years of sexual abuse that led them to fear for their lives. Oh, dear. Leslie makes a surprising move after Judge Weisberg approves the prosecution's request to unseal the tape of the brothers' confession to Dr. Oziel, which means we'll be seeing him again. Yay! After closing arguments are made, the jury is left to determine a verdict. You can admit The Blotter Presents to your social media circle at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. This has been The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, and until next time, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.